Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today, my guest is again chemist Marcos Eberlin. Eberlin is a member of the Brazilian Academy of Sciences with a PhD in chemistry from the University of Campinas. He's the former president of the International Mass Spectrometry Foundation and has published close to 1,000 scientific articles. He's the author of the new book, Foresight, How the Chemistry of Life Reveals Planning and Purpose. Marcos, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back and also to discuss a little bit more about foresight, which I think gives really strong evidence for intelligent mind as the cause of the universe in life. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, your book develops a case for ID from the observation that so much in life and in nature appears to have been designed with a view to anticipating future problems and solving them ahead of time. And you give us lots of examples, and you show that only minds can do that. Well, in the last episode, we started talking about a couple of vestigial organs and processes that were at odds with the Darwinian perspective. We're talking about diarrhea, believe it or not. You call it the body's power wash cycle. And you call it a blessing, and you do a great job of explaining how that process is a blessing to our body, biologically and otherwise. So you also mentioned the appendix and how that's related to the system of diarrhea. Maybe you can review a little bit what we talked about in the last episode, and maybe mention why Jerry Coyne took issue with your discussion of this.
Oh, yes, Andrew. You know, diarrhea and the appendix is really nice case of foresight because it's a combined solution. You know, we have the intestines, and we know that sometimes our intestines are invaded by bad bacteria. We have good bacteria there working for us, helping us to digest food. But once in a while, there are some invaders. The bad bacteria come. And what was the solution? Well, people would argue that a perfect planet intestine would take care of all types of bacteria, but I don't believe it. This is the best solution, because the best solution for invaders were flushing them away, getting rid of them by this very powerful jet washing, this flushing with water. And it's really nice process because it eliminates the bad bacteria. But this solution came with another problem. It was not possible to eliminate just the bad bacteria. This washing also eliminates the good bacteria. So what was the solution for the problem that the first solution brought about? The solution was the appendix. It's a storehouse. It's a perfectly designed storehouse for the good bacteria to hide them. So this flushing goes away. And after the flushing, the good bacteria that is stored in the appendix repopulate our intestines. It's a wonderful solution. It's a masterpiece with biochemistry and physiology. I love it in many ways as a biochemist. It's an ingenious solution. And it's an all or nothing game also. Everything should be there from the very beginning. The first time the intestines were invaded by bad bacteria, the diarrhea should be there. The first time the diarrhea flushes away all the bacteria from our intestines, the appendix should be there. So it's a foresight or death solution. Somebody had to have this ability to predict the future, to shape the future, to provide our body with diarrhea plus the appendix for us to survive invasion from bad bacteria. Isn't that great? We have to surrender to evidence. This is a strong case for foresight. It's a strong case for intelligent design.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly there. Although Jerry Coyne, professor emeritus at the University of Chicago, doesn't, and responded to your comments about this on his own blog, Why Evolution is True. He says there's no need to invoke intelligent design to explain both diarrhea and the appendix. Natural selection can take care of that. Well, my question regarding that is the appendix a simple organ that could be easily formed by a couple of beneficial mutations, as he seems to suggest?
Oh, I don't believe so, Andrew. It's not a single organ at all. It seems to be simple when you first look at it, but it's a very sophisticated organ in terms of design. It's perfectly designed in terms of its shape. It's curved a little bit and display this perfect finger-like shape. And it's ideal to work as a storehouse for gut bacteria. It's placed at just the right location in the intestines. It's outside the normal one-way flow of food and germs. And also, it's not affected by this jet washing of diarrhea. It's a masterpiece of jet engineering and safe storehouse building. It's not reasonable to believe that unguided process, mutations, an accident could get this very sophisticated organ there from the very beginning. It should be there. Because if you think of a not perfectly designed appendix, and then the appendicitis should kill the guy. So you either have a perfectly designed appendix or you should not hope for one. And so it's a strong case for foresight, because it's not simple at all. It's a rather sophisticated, well-planned, well-designed organ.
Well, in his new book, Darwin Devolves, your ID colleague Michael Behe points out that evolutionary studies in recent years show that Darwin's mechanism works by a process of devolution, not evolution. The breakdown of genes can make something look and act different, but it doesn't have the power to build or create anything at the genetic level. So when it comes to these so-called vestigial organs, a change in function is seen by Darwinists as evidence of natural selection, and by intelligent design advocates as evidence of foresight. Is a devolutionary process at play with these vestigial organs?
Oh, Andrew, I also agree with Michael Behe that evolution devolves things rather than evolves. I also read his second book on The Edge of Evolution, and there you can find many cases from scientific data showing the limits of evolution. He says the limits are two mutations, beneficial mutations. And most time what we see in life is that use the genetic information that's already there to try to get some protection from enemies. If you are attacked by some enemy, you try to use what you have. And sometimes you shut down some metabolic processes, and sometimes also some organs that have original functions, very important functions, clever functions, it may not need these functions anymore. So I would say that if we have any vestigial organs, the list is being reduced, but if we do find that we have a vestigial organ, it might be that some degradation may be the best explanation for those organs. So evolution, you know, it's easy to explain how an organ lost its function. Okay, this is not so difficult. But for evolution to be a good explanation for life, it should not explain how organs lost their functions, but they should explain the appearance of that organ at the very first place and the initial functions that they have. And this is something that I've never read in the literature, any article explaining how a masterpiece of engineering as the appendix evolved. All the genetic information that is necessary to make such a wonderful organ. Is it possible to make it from evolutionary process? I don't believe so. What we should ask the evolutionists is an explanation in terms of genetic information, in terms of chemistry, biochemistry, real evidence, how the appendix got there at the very first time, and how a masterpiece of physiology could arrive. That's an explanation that is missing from the literature.
A lot depends on your perspective coming into this, doesn't it? I mean, if you have a a bottom-up perspective, like the Darwinists, you're going to visualize this as something coming from something else, but going upwards. Whereas if you have a top-down approach and you understand design and foresight is needed, you can see how a devolutionary process would work when one function changes to another. It's devolutionary, not evolutionary. It's a big, big difference there. Well, I have a few other questions for you. One is, you know, as you mentioned, diarrhea and appendicitis or inflammation of the appendix can be harmful and even lethal. Why would you suggest that they be ingenious solutions of an intelligent mind?
Well, Andrew, I know that sometimes diarrhea can be lethal, actually. And also the appendicitis, it's getting worse and worse in the world. But as I mentioned in my book, Foresight, appendicitis is not a problem at all in the third world countries. And it's getting worse and worse in the industrialized countries. So they were discussing that things that are triggering appendicitis are more related to the industrialization of society. So I would argue that diarrhea was working perfectly and combined with the appendix for hundreds of years, up to the point that we started to make bad mistakes. Like for diarrhea, diarrhea is a problem, but in crowded cities with severe poverty. And we also started to contaminate our drinking water with bad bacteria. This also triggers diarrhea too much. The bad mistakes that we made are contributing to make diarrhea lethal. And also appendicitis are getting worse and worse. So I think that the solutions, the two combined solutions were working perfectly. That's what I argue for hundreds of years, up to the point that we started triggering appendicitis. So this should be put on our account. It was not planned to be the way it is now.
So we can't blame a designer for that one. Well, it's basically an unstoppable force of modern life and innovation hitting the immovable object of our biology. And we shouldn't be surprised when things happen that aren't necessarily good. That's a great explanation. Well, final question, why does it take more faith to support a Darwinist view than an intelligent design perspective?
Well, Andrew, I think it takes more faith because the ideas are not supported by data. Actually, they're against many laws. For instance, I'm a chemist, and if you look for the chemical evolution of life, for instance, how the life first started in this planet, well, evolutionists will tell you that amino acids react with themselves to make proteins. But we know this is impossible. The chemical laws prohibit those reactions to occur. We know that the reactions between two amino acids are not favorable energetically. So we have to hope that a reaction that is prohibited by chemical laws happened in this universe. And then you have to also believe by faith that the side groups on those amino acids didn't react with themselves. And if you look at the laws of chemistry, you see that those side reactions with the side groups in the amino acids are much, much more favorable than the right reactions with the amino group and the carboxylic acid group. So you have to have faith on the impossible. This is something that I don't like to have, faith on the impossible. If you look now how the reactions occur for the amino acids, you see that, for instance, the amino acids are not reacting as amino acids. They have been derivatized as amino esters. And now the reaction is favorable because an intelligent mind, a superb chemist, was there at the very first beginning, planning for everything. So it's not an act of faith. It's reason. It's following the evidence, wherever it leads. When I see the evidence, when I see how many intelligent solutions were implemented from the very beginning, when I see that only a mind capable of foresight could predict so many different problems in the future and provide in advance the solutions, ingenious solutions, playing with chemistry, biochemistry, physiology, I'm convinced that intelligent design is by far the best rational explanation. And I'm also convinced that faith on the impossible is the only way that you can accept evolution as the best cause for the universe and life. And faith on the impossible is something that I don't like to have.
Very well put, Dr. Eberlin. I really appreciate your candor and your ability to break these subjects down for us with your expertise. It's just so much depends on your perspective, and you're teaching us how to have that perspective of top-down design and beauty in biology, in chemistry, and life in the universe. And it's quite amazing to behold. Well, thank you so much for joining us for today's discussion. So glad to have talked to you about this. What's next for you? You're going to be promoting your book for a while, Foresight.
Well, the next is to translate the book into Portuguese and Spanish. So it is going to be nice because the book will be available in English for the whole world. But lots of people in this world also speak Spanish and can only read Spanish text. And Portuguese is also an important language for many countries. So we want to spread this Foresight news to the whole world. It's really nice that we can teach this scientific lesson to the whole world in many different languages. That's our next step.
With reason and humility. Marcos, thanks so much for joining us again.
It was a pleasure. And it's always a pleasure to debate. Dr. Coyne, I'm glad that he started that debate because this is science. We should debate.
Absolutely.
The more we debate, I think, the more we are convinced that intelligent design is far, far the best explanation for life in the universe. So let's debate. Let's search for the truth. Let's give the data the opportunity to speak. That's my whole point.
Sure. And Dr. Coyne, if you're listening to this, thank you, honestly, for being bold enough to bring this up and grapple with it. And as we say in Britain, where I'm from, hash it out, because that's what you have to do in science to get to the bottom of things. Well, for more of Marcos Eberlin's great arguments for intelligent design, pick up a copy of his book, Foresight, How the Chemistry of Life Reveals Planning and Purpose. And for more episodes like these, you can visit idthefuture.com or find it through your favorite podcasts app. For ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.